Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, May 18th, 2014. This is episode 1084. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by NatureBox, where you can order great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like mango almond bites. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, on the air once again. Your worst nightmare, a geek with his own radio show. And this is the show where we talk... Sorry, my inner geek sprang forth. This is the show where we talk about computers and the internet and smartphones, home theater, digital photography, anything with a chip in it. All the stuff, all the fun. This is the toy store. We talk about toys. 8888 Ask Leo is the number if you want to call and ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, well, please be my guest and call via Skype and it'll cost you nothing. 8888 Ask Leo. We're waiting to hear. The boards of AT&T and DirecTV are meeting. They expect to announce today that AT&T will acquire DirecTV. Just the landscape seems to be shrinking. Comcast owns NBC. AT&T was at one point broken up, and now it's all back together. These giants, and it doesn't seem, and now Comcast, of course, wants to buy Time Warner. It doesn't seem like that's all in our to our favor. It seems like competition and diversity is a good thing for you and me. It's a great thing for businesses to have, you know, all joined together, but not such a good thing for you and me. I presume they have to get regulatory approval. I don't anticipate any difficulty there. If Comcast and Time Warner can unite, I don't see any problem with AT&T and DirecTV. You ever notice that geeks, when you ask them a question, especially if it's a technical question, will start the answer with the word "so"? There's an article today in Business Insider referring to a New York Times blog interview, the Bits blog, with Mark Zuckerberg, in which Mark answered four questions. Actually, I'm sorry. In the first question, his answer had the word "so" in it four times. So. You ever notice that geek's answer? So. Does that bother you? Yeah, it bothers John. But John's a stickler for good grammar. He's the one who comes running in when I say daylight savings time and says, saving. So there's a debate, so, over what the "so" means. Some people are insulted. Sometimes it feels like the "so" is, I know you're an idiot, but I'm going to try to explain this in a way you'll understand. Sometimes you feel that way, especially when a big fat geek. But according to Galena Bolden, who's a professor of communication at Rutgers University, she studied data in the U.S. and the U.K. from the last 30 years. She says the word "so" appears at the beginning of sentences in two ways in spoken communications. Before questions like, "so, how do you feel?" That seems normal. That's not insulting. "So, how'd it go?" That's not insulting. Or before answers, especially during interviews. The "so, how'd it go" is more common, but when you get the "so" at the start of an answer, Bolden says, Professor Bolden says, that's an interactional agenda.
What?
It says, we're going to start a new topic. I notice that when geeks do that, they say, what they're saying, well, so it's like, okay, I'm going to pause, I'm going to take a deep breath, I'm going to think about this, and I'm going to try to explain it in a way that you will understand it. So I feel like it's a little, maybe a little condescending. Fast Company wrote an article, Hunter Thurman, he said, the use of so indicates something rehearsed and dumbed down. He says, don't do it, it alienates your audience. Yeah, I'm not sure I disagree with that. But Professor Bolden says, no, this contributes to human relationships. It communicates the speaker is interested in or concerned about the recipient. It also invokes prior conversations, drawing on their relationship history. I guess that's not untrue either, is it? You ask me, what is this net neutrality thing? I'll say, and what I'm doing is I'm thinking, well, how do I describe this in a way? What metaphor, driveway, highway, delivering packages, what metaphor can I use to explain this to you? And I think there is a little bit of feeling of like, because you're not so bright. I'm going to have to make this easy, right? It's a little condescending, especially when somebody as smart as Mark Zuckerberg does it. So, see this internet thing. I thought it was interesting. I've noticed that geeks tend to do this. And every geek, you know, from Steve Wozniak to Mark Zuckerberg, they all seem to do that. And I've always wondered what it means. Professor Bolden says it's a good thing. It started apparently at Microsoft, and they popularized it, and apparently that's where Zuck learned it, according to Michael Lewis, who has also observed this. Well, we have to debunk a rumor. There's no truth to the story that came out last Friday that Samsung was going to rebrand Heathrow's busiest terminal, Heathrow Airport in London, to Terminal Samsung Galaxy S5. Terminal 5, Heathrow was quick to say, Terminal 5 will not be called Terminal Galaxy S5. Thank you very much. It was just a publicity stunt on Samsung's part. Oh, man. And if you've been using Whisper or Secret, you know those apps, Secret's very popular in Silicon Valley. If you've been using it to reveal secrets that you shouldn't be, perhaps about your company, or maybe even as a whistleblower. In fact, some of these Whisper, the company Whisper, kind of encourages you to use it as a whistleblower. Don't. Article in Wired this weekend says, in fact, if you read the privacy policies, they're not so private as you might think. All of these apps say, if subpoenaed, we will reveal not only what you said, but who said it and where you are and where you live and everything. Oh. If the court asks us to disclose your identity, we will do it, they say. Yeah. I can't help but read Secret, but I never believe anything. More and more of the rumors that we're starting to see in tech industry especially seem to be coming from this app. Sometimes they're true, sometimes they're not. Tell you one rumor that we're still on hold. I was skeptical when I first heard it last week that Apple was about to spend $3.2 billion to buy Beats headphones. Didn't make any sense to me. Be the biggest acquisition Apple's ever made. And not a word since. Everybody thought this was true. I just want to point out I didn't. I didn't believe it. Didn't happen, did it?
What?
You're coming in here to tell me Beats was acquired by Apple? No.
I was not.
Okay. That's a relief.
Harry Shearer.
Harry Shearer. Le Show.
He's been doing for over a yes. couple of years.
And he features answers to questions starting with so.
So he'll actually, because
Harry's famous for this. He'll take little snippets.
Right. He'll play the question. And he'll play the first sentence of the answer. It'll play like an interview.
So Harry's.
The person does every.
They can't hear you, John, so I'll relay this.
The person does every answer
beginning with so.
So it's a segment on his podcast, Le Show.
I love Le Show. It's one of my favorite podcasts. Google has announced that it is acquiring WordLens. This is a cool app. but it was a big iPhone app for a long time, and that's a little odd. Remember, in fact, you might have seen it in the Apple ads. That's where people became aware of it. It's called Word Lens, and you'd be in France, and you wouldn't understand a sign, so you'd hold up your iPhone, and you'd run Word Lens. It would use the camera, and it would translate the sign as you were holding it up into English. So Google's bought this, and apparently it was featured in an Apple ad. I guess Apple will have to take it out of the ads. They're going to put this technology into Google Translate, which I think is, I've always loved Google Translate. In fact, you can use speech with Google Translate. I've used this in Italy. You go up and you say something in English, and then the app will say it in Italian. All right, we're going to take a break. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our podcast today is brought to you by our friends at Prosper.com, a really great way to get money fast when you need it. What would you do if you could get 72 hours, you'd get $35,000. Just boom like that at a low interest rate, fixed rate, unsecured loan. Wouldn't that be great? What would you do? Pay off your high balance credit cards, high interest rate credit cards, maybe start a business, maybe do some home improvement. That's what Prosper is. Prosper is a peer to, this is a very interesting idea. This is a Silicon Valley's answer to banks and bank loans. It's called peer-to-peer lending. Prosper, it brings together people with money to lend, not banks, just people with money to lend, with people who need money. And then they facilitate the whole thing. You fill out an easy online application. You provide a few details. You'll see a rate online almost instantly. Low fixed rates, they're unsecured, you don't need any collateral, and multi-year terms, of course, are available. The rates are very good, and the nice thing is you will not affect your credit score by checking your rate. So check your rate, find out, go to prosper.com. There are more than now 2 million members there, both lenders and borrowers alike, and over $1 billion in funded loans. So you know this works. This is a revolution, and you'll never set foot in a bank. No outrageous fees, fixed rates, no rising interest rates. It is Silicon Valley's answer to personal loans. I want you to visit Prosper.com. By the way, they're offering Twit viewers a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. Prosper.com/Twit. If you would go there, that way they'll know you heard it on the Tech Guy podcast. Yes, a special URL. Prosper, PROSPER.com/Twit. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days and a $50 Amazon gift card when you get that loan. Prosper.com is not affiliated with Amazon. For gift card details, visit the website prosper.com/twit. And we thank them for their support of the Tech Guy Show. Prosper. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number. Our website is techguylabs.com. Go there. You'll find a link to our chat room. Love the chat room. 737 people in there. And it's safe. It's not, you know, it's heavily moderated. So you can, you know, you can watch with... Be relaxed. Watch with confidence. The best way to play, though, is 888-827-5536. Heather Hammond has the day off. Kim Schaefer filling in. Hi, Kim.
Hello.
Did you run in the beta breakers this morning in San Francisco?
I did, and I got here in time. Isn't it amazing?
You're incredible. It's not a marathon. It's only a few miles, right?
7.4.
Nothing.
And the guys that won, they did it in...
Half an hour or something.
4 minute, 30 second miles,
wow.
I think. Crazy.
Wow.
No, I didn't really do
no.
that.
I've you could have,
once.
Though.
I've done it once.
Have you?
Yeah.
What was your costume? Because apparently... When the pros run, they run in running shorts. But when the amateurs run, they wear costumes. What was your costume? Were you a bottle of mustard?
Close. No, I went with a group that was flight attendants, airplanes, that kind of thing.
So you see, that's one of the things that happens. And San Francisco is kind of wacky, but that's one of the things that happens is you get these group costumes.
Well, I hands down had the best costume.
You were what?
The barf bag. I was quite
so you were an airplane.
Everybody wanted to take a photo with
you. That's great.
It was awesome.
How fun. Who should I talk to first on this?
How about Bernie in Colorado?
Program.
And he wants to know if there's some kind of a program to organize his photos where he can choose the sequence and not
instead of
have
the instead
device
of the computer.
Or computer or whatever by date or
that's a good question.
Yeah.
Hey, Bernie, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How are you doing today?
Hi, Leo. I'm rescanning some slides of South America. So there's no metadata. These were not digital pictures.
Right.
And
So the date will all be the date you scanned them.
Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, normally your computer, if you try to put pictures in a different sequence, will go alphabetical or numeric or something like that.
Yeah, the trick is to use an album. And are you on Windows?
Both, Windows and Mac.
In albums, I believe you can sort them in any way you want, and it just remembers that sorting. I think that's true on iPhoto, and then on Windows, Picasa is a great free program, P-I-C-A-S-A.
Okay, got that.
Huh. And I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, chat room, but I believe this is a good example because there's no metadata, there's no the actual date of the photograph isn't in it because you scanned it. The date of the file will be the date you saved it, you scanned it.
Yeah.
And that's useless because, you know, they'll all be the same.
Yeah.
So in order by date is not useful. That's a great question. I never, you know, I always go by date or file name. Order... I think Picasa albums will let you order slides in any order you want.
So basically, the term I would need is order slides.
Well, what you're gonna do is create an album, and that's the key in both iPhoto and Picasa. That's an indication to it that you're gonna put these in order. It will normally, you know, sort them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at a very complicated solution that involves renaming the files.
I think there's a batch file renaming.
There is. Picasa has a batch file naming edit built into it.
Oh.
So you could, by doing that, get it in an order you want and then select all and rename them. And then from then on, sorting by name will work.
Wow.
That's kind of a clever workaround.
Yeah.
You'd think that if you just... Yeah, see, so here's the deal. You can, in a folder or in an album, manually arrange these.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem people say is, well, but sometimes the manual order gets lost. So the suggestion would be to first order them, then use batch rename to give them a numeric sequence, and from then on... sorting by name will work.
Okay.
If you're using iPhoto, the chat room tells me, you can create an album that, you know, regardless of the metadata, stays in the order. And I believe that's also true of Picasa. The whole idea is not just because, you know, when you look at it by event, it's going to be by date. That's what an event is by date. But
yeah.
The event in this case was scanning the photo. That's useless.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is create an album called South America Photos, and then you can reorder them within that album. And then batch rename them in Picasa anyway, and that will keep it forever.
Wonderful.
Okay?
Okay.
That's
thanks.
A great question. You know, it's funny. You would think that would be easy, but in fact, you know, computers are very literal-minded. They want to put things in chronological order, but that's not always the case. You don't always have a chronological order, do you? Jane's in San Diego. She's next. Hi, Jane. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes. Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Leo, my question is a little different. It's about a landline cordless phone.
Yes.
And I'm hoping either you or somebody in your chat room can solve the problem. I've tried everything. I used to have a, should I name the brand? It's a great brand. It's nothing.
Yeah, you can name a brand. Okay.
It's a Panasonic cordless phone.
And those are excellent. I've used those for years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when I had, you know, after my other one was too old and had a little problems, I bought a new Panasonic cordless phone. But this one, it works with all the stuff that I'm living in the dark ages. I'm 65 and I'm not, you know, technology. It Bluetooth cell phone. I don't use it for any of those purposes.
Right.
But I'm thinking all these new things and it won't work like my old one. So anyway, I hook it up, you know, with the same DSL, you know, thing and everything and with the filter. What happens is I'm talking to you now on the phone. However, I have a headset plugged into the thing because that's the way I like to talk. I can hear better.
Yes.
However, you know, when I grab the phone real quick and everything, I like to speak on the speaker. And the speaker has this chirping noise. You don't hear it on your end, but I hear it.
Yes.
And, you know, we changed everything. Changed the filter, the modem, had the AT&T guy come up.
It's my opinion that you are suffering from slippage.
slipping.
So this is not unusual on cordless phones when they get out of sync. The slippage can happen in two levels. It can happen at the phone company level. That is when the voice gets out of sync and you'll get an echo. And that's not unusual. In fact, my mom, every time I talk to her, I get slippage. unless I use a particular landline phone, and for some reason that doesn't do it. So I would say what you want is something called DECT, D-E-C-T.
D-E-C-T.
Yeah, Panasonic makes DECT headsets. These are much more reliable cordless. It's digital enhanced cordless phones.
Now, could I ask you, you said headset, because I have the headset, and the headset works fine. It's just when I unhook the headset and talk on the speaker.
Okay. Oh, all right. Well, that's another thing then. Turn the down. So you're on a speakerphone?
No, right now, in order to talk with you and have
you're on the headset.
Sanity, yeah. I'm on the
headset. When you're saying when you use the speakerphone, it's broadcasting into the room so you can walk around. That's when you're
getting, yes,
yeah,
correct.
That's normal.
That's
why I don't like speakerphones. In fact, when you call us, we'll tell you, pick up the phone, please. We don't want a speakerphone. Yeah, it's getting back into its feedback. From the speakers, they do echo cancellation, but it's not perfect. I'll talk a little more about this when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on the air once again. How are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on the air once again. How are you today?
I'm getting some echo on my phone here. I don't die. Hello?
How are you today?
Thank you for that, Adam Katz, Alberto. Turkey burgers. So we were talking to Jane about her cordless phone woes, and she says it sounds great when she's wearing a headset. It's when she has it on speakerphone that it doesn't work. Well, yeah, that's not much of a surprise, really. This happens on Skype, too, and one of the reasons this happens is both Skype and your cordless phone have something called echo cancellation. If they didn't, it would be unusable on speakerphone, because think about it. The microphone and the speakerphone is right next to the speaker. So if somebody's talking to you and you're hearing it on the speaker and it goes into the microphone, you're going to get this feedback. It's going to be echoey. It's going to be terrible. So the phone tries to sense when you're talking and when the other guy's talking and mutes the microphone when your other party is talking and mutes the speaker when you're talking. And in theory, this will keep the echo from happening. But the chirping you hear, I believe, not having heard it, but I believe that the chirping you hear is the echo cancellation kicking in. So you get just the beginning, the first, and then the echo cancellation kills it. The echo would be the echo cancellation not working so well. So this can happen on a speakerphone. If you're hearing it in a regular phone call, that's slippage. That's a desynchronization between the sender and receiver causing echo. If you're hearing it on the headsets, same thing. That can be desynchronization between the wireless portion of the phone and the base station. But if you're hearing it on speakerphone, well, that's just the nature of speakerphone. A better phone might do a better job of echo cancellation. And I mentioned I do like for cordless these new DECT, DECT 6.0 phones. They really do a much better job of everything, especially the wireless connection, but also of echo cancellation. So, you know, Panasonic makes them. Everybody makes them now. So there are all sorts of issues that can happen. And this happens, too, with Skype. It's fact why when I use Skype, I recommend people get headsets, if at all possible. You know, the headsets are the microphone and headphone combination. That's going to give you a much better result with Skype than using the speakers on your laptop and the microphone on your laptop. Skype has echo cancellation, too. And it does a surprisingly good job, but this is challenging. So the idea is you're getting a little bit of feedback in effect from the speakers because the echo cancellation isn't fast enough. That's the chirping and the echoing. And so my suggestion is don't use the speakerphone. We don't. We try not to let people use speakerphone on this show either. It just doesn't sound good. Gary in Sun City, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gary.
Yes, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I just upgraded my computer to 8.1, and I have a business that I need to record information to a floppy drive in order to transport it to the machinery. And it records, and I can read the disk back on the 8.1, but my machines will only read the header, and that's it.
So you'd like have a milling machine or a CNC machine or something that you need to control with a floppy disk.
So, yes.
And you are using a USB floppy disk on your Windows machine?
Yes.
So you can write the data and you can read the data if you wrote it, but you're saying the machines don't understand it.
Right.
Boy, that's a... I don't know. I don't know. Has it worked in the past?
No, well, I just upgraded to 8.1.
So it started, you were doing Windows, or the earlier version of Windows, and it was fine.
Yes.
And you went to Windows 8.1, and all of a sudden it can't read the floppy.
Right.
Golly. I don't know why Windows 8.1 would change that. The formatting of the disk has not changed. The data for, what are you using to write the data? A particular program, or is it a text file, or?
Well, it's a particular program. It's a digitizing program,
right?
You know, basically,
it's just like one of those embroidering sewing machines, something like that.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Can it be that the something about Windows 8.1 is incompatible with a machine? That seems a little odd.
Well, I would think so too, because like I said, the machine will read the header, but it will not read the data under the header.
That I don't know. I just is it? It's the same hardware. It's just a new operating system.
Yes.
So James in the chat room says, and this might be the solution, although it seems hard to believe that this would change anything. But you want to make sure that in the BIOS, you know, when you first turn on the machine, it says press F8 to enter setup or escape or delete. Do that. And he says there's a checkbox that says legacy floppy emulation. Now, this doesn't make a lot of sense because the BIOS was not changed with the update to Windows 8.1. So, but it would be worth trying it. The software works. The sewing machine software works on 8.1 properly. That would be most likely the issue. You could see the disk drive. You can write to the disk drive. And your sewing machine actually sees the disk drive and even reads the header but doesn't get the instructions.
Right.
So it says, oh, I recognize this. This is a pattern, X, Y, Z, but it just doesn't ever execute it.
Right.
It doesn't make a lot of sense because you didn't change the hardware. You only changed the operating system. Apparently, Microsoft, now maybe this is why, James is saying Microsoft turned off support for legacy features in Windows 8.1 that worked fine in previous versions. So perhaps it's that. This all doesn't make sense. It would either work or it wouldn't work. It half works is a little odd. I'm wondering if the data that's why would it be able to read the header and not the rest of the information? Have you looked at the contents of the floppy on your Windows 8.1 machine? Have you actually looked at the files it's saving and so forth?
Oh, yes. As long as I read it back on the 8.1 machine,
it's fine.
Comes in fine.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to have to let this go out to the audience in the chat room and maybe just keep listening. Maybe we'll find an answer for you, Gary. That's very odd. What do you make T-shirts and hats and things like that?
Yes.
Yeah. How fun. And is this your business or a hobby?
Business.
Well, then it's pretty important we get this working, isn't it?
I would think so, yes.
Yeah.
Either that or I'll go back to XP.
So you jumped from XP to 8.1?
Yes.
It has to be something in the software, not the floppy disk. I would expect it's something in the software. But I don't know off the top of my head. I'll tell you what, perhaps somebody's using a similar solution. And what's the name of the sewing machine, just so we know?
Tajima's.
Okay. So if anybody's using this particular setup and knows what the issue is, I mean, I would call the company that made the sewing machine and the software. And say, hey, do you know problems with Windows 8.1? If they're still using a floppy disk to get the data to the sewing machine. It's possible that they haven't really entered the 21st century yet and maybe don't even know that there is a new version of Windows. This is exactly the problem, of course, that people, and one of the reasons people stick with XP is issues like that. It's a USB floppy, so you don't need a special driver for it. Yeah, you got me. I mean, lots of speculation in the chat room, but none of us can really think of what it could be, Gary. I'll keep listening. Keep listening. We'll see if we can get a solution for you. I would imagine newer machines will use SD cards or flash drives and that kind of thing. Lou in the Inland Empire. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thank you for taking my call today.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
All right. Hey, I've got a quick question, simple question for you, as a matter of fact. I have a Dell Inspiron and Windows 7 installed on that, and I had it for a few years now. I had the McAfee antivirus for about a couple years. That subscription ran out, so I kind of let the computer go unprotected.
Ah, let's protect you, but we got to take a break. Stay on the line. Protecting your Windows 7 right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, we've got somebody in the chat room who has a similar setup, a sewing machine that uses a floppy disk for the designs, a Windows 8.1 desktop. Maybe this is the caller. He says he can still do it on XP. Wrote a file for my 8.1 desktop, move it to my XP. Well, I don't know. This is a puzzle. This is a puzzle. It could be that the floppy disk drive just failed right at the same time. Or not failed, but got wonky right at the same time as you upgraded to 8.1. I don't understand it. I don't understand it, but I'm sure somebody will chip in here. That's, you know, it's not just me answering these calls. We got a great big audience. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a suggestion for our caller. Now we got Lou on the line from the Inland Empire. Hi, Lou.
Hey, Leo. So, getting back to before the break there.
Yeah.
The computer was unprotected for about 6 months. It's protected now. However, I'm not using McAfee anymore. I'm using Tech Genie. I'm kind of really new to that program. But I did a full scan on it, and it's supposed to be getting rid of the adware and whatnot, of course, because I did have a major problem with adware. After doing the scan, the adware has not yet disappeared. So
yeah, you know, so with the difference, one of the problems is that antiviruses, that's why we call them adware, antiviruses don't necessarily get rid of adware. They're not malware. They're not viruses. They think they're perilously close to viruses. But generally, if it's something, for instance, you downloaded something from cnetsdownload.com and the downloader installed Conduit and a bunch of other adware on there, which it does in many cases, your antivirus won't stop it, nor will it flag it as malware, because it's not. It's adware. It's just as annoying as malware. But,
yeah, exactly.
But the things that are different are, A, you were asked ahead of time sometimes whether you want to install it, and B, you can remove it in the programs and features or add remove programs control panel. And if you, so have you checked add remove programs to see if any of that stuff is there?
I have, but I haven't been able to really find it in the control panel. So that's what kind of concerned me, because it said there was a software that was installed into my computer that I have no knowledge.
Was it Tech Genie that told you you had this stuff on there?
Not necessarily. I just kind of ran the scan. I just got this program about last week. I didn't really study it too much. Like I said, I'm pretty new to the program.
I don't know anything about Tech Genie. It's not my first choice. In fact, I would get rid of it.
Okay.
Which version of Windows are you on?
7.
Microsoft has a free antivirus called Security Essentials that is far better than anything else out there.
Okay.
An antivirus is not going to prevent you from doing dumb things, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I put dumb in quotes. Dumb as in unsafe. But sometimes we do unsafe things, not just because we don't know any better, or just because they're sneaky, these guys. It's not your fault. They're sneaky. They tricks you. So
yeah.
I would uninstall Tech Genie right away.
Okay.
Uninstall anything else you've got on there. I'm not fond of McAfee either. Microsoft.com/SecurityEssentials is free.
Essentials.
Okay.
And the other thing is, you have Microsoft puts on there every time they do an update, they update this every second Tuesday of the month, something called the malicious software removal tool. I would run that. You might have some success with that. And that there's no icon for that. Microsoft hides it. Every second Tuesday, they update it and run a brief scan. But you can run a more thorough scan. And now here, I'm going to tell you how. You're going to have to do this from the command line. And you just click start and run, and you type MRT. That's the name of the program, the malicious software removal tool, MRT. And hit return, and that will then do that will open a window now, and then you can check the box that says thorough scan. I would think that's probably a good idea. Look at your browsers. A lot of times this adware is an extension that has been installed without your knowledge into the browser. So look at browser extensions. It's a good idea. Almost all browsers will let you start up in a safe mode, or look in the menus for Internet Explorer, no extensions, that kind of thing, and see if you can run it that way. And if the adware goes away, then yes, it's an extension that's been surreptitiously added to your browser. Antivirus is... Symantec had a press release apparently this week that said, our antivirus is only about 40% effective. This is Norton. It's only about 40% effective. And it's not, what they're saying is it's hard for us to be 100% effective because we're not going to stop users. You can't from doing what they want to do. And that's really where you get into trouble. Users go to download.com, download something, install it, and, nothing the antivirus can do about that. I don't generally recommend trying to remove infections with tools like Malwarebytes or SpyBot or Spyware Blaster, only because I feel like they can give you a sense of false confidence. They don't any of them work 100%. Plus, there's a risk, a real risk, and one of the reasons I don't mention them very often on the radio show, there's a real risk that you will, or somebody, not you, but somebody listening will say, I heard Leo say something about Malwarebytes. They'll type it into Google, and they'll get not the Malwarebytes, but a Malwarebytes. It's actually malware itself. So I'm reluctant to recommend these kinds of solutions. You probably can dig around and figure out where it is this thing is starting up. Turn it off. If it's just adware, it's not malicious. If it's malware, it usually doesn't announce itself. I almost wish Windows had never been invented at this point. We spend way too much time. You spend way too much time worrying about this kind of stuff. And it's not getting better. Microsoft and Windows 8 has built in security essentials. They call it Defender now, but they've built an antivirus into the operating system, which they should have done from day one. I think Microsoft could do better, but I don't fully blame them. It's just a huge target. And I don't know what to say. It's just people get bit way too often. It's very frustrating. Alan on the line from Marina Del Rey, California. Hello, Alan.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
Dig this, man. I mean, literally, because I'm looking for treasure. I've been looking online, and I found this guy that claims that you can see auras from gold and silver and other metals if you have a digital camera that's set up the right way with a neutral filter. Is that what it's called?
Neutral density filter?
I guess that's what it is. And there's some videos.
I don't think it's going to work as well as a metal detector.
Well, it's long distance. You can do, you just take a picture of an area.
Yeah, no.
And then use a metal detector to
narrow it. How much does this fellow want for this little thing?
For the book?
Yeah.
The book, I saw it for $200.
Yeah.
For the book.
Save your money. Nope, can't do it. Crazy Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show, our podcast today, as always, brought to you by my friends at Citrix. They do such a great job with ShareFile. It's how I share my files with... Well, in the business these days, and what I'm sharing is audio files, of course, but in business these days, almost every business email has something attached, a spreadsheet, a document, a contract, a presentation. You send those PowerPoints. And you hear me talk about this all the time. It's a bad idea to attach files to email. It's not secure. Email attachments are a common way to spread viruses, so it's unsafe. And let's not forget bounce backs. Most email systems can't handle these large files, and so there's no guarantee you're going to get that data to the recipient. So here's what I suggest: a 30-day free trial of ShareFile. Go to ShareFile.com and click that podcast listeners link right at the top there. ShareFile will and use the offer code Tech Guy if you would. That way they'll know you heard about it on the Tech Guy show. Pick your industry too, because ShareFile is compliant with regulations in a great many industries: financial services, SEC regulations. If you're in the medical industry, healthcare, they are HIPAA compliant. You have total control over the file. You never have any risk of losing control. You can see, you could say, they only can download it for one day once or unlimited. It really is a great way to share files. It's how I share files all the time with the radio stations. We send them audio. We send them ads. Hi, this is Leo Laporte. Whenever I'm in Cleveland, I listen to WGST, that kind of thing. And it's really an easy way to do it. It looks like email. They get a link that they can click. It's got your company logo on there. I rely on ShareFile, so do millions of other professionals, and I want you to try it free. ShareFile.com. Click the microphone right at the top there where it says podcast listeners and use our offer code TechGuy for 30 days free. ShareFile.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and home theater and sewing machines with floppy disks and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion. Actually, we have so remember last hour, if you're just joining us, we had somebody who uses his Windows PC to create designs, which he then puts on a floppy disk and brings over to his embroidery machine, and then he sticks the floppy in, the embroidery machine reads it, goes brrrr, and spits out, you know, a beautiful embroidered artwork. I've seen these before, and so the floppy disk maybe means it's a little bit antiquated. It was a Windows XP machine, and our caller updated it to Windows 8.1. Now, he still has the floppy. He still has the software. The software runs fine. It writes to the floppy. He can look at the floppy on that Windows 8.1 machine. It looks fine. He takes it over to the sewing machine. The sewing machine sees the floppy. It sees the header. It says, oh, yes, designed for Tweety Bird embroidery. But then, boom, it won't read the rest of it. So a number of people have called, and let's hope we can get an answer here. Let's start with Ronnie in Los Angeles. Hi, Ronnie. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. We just had that problem with our machine recently, or a girlfriend's machine.
Okay.
I have the Windows 7, and it works perfectly. But she went and got Windows 8, and I don't know what program he's using specifically, what embroidery program. But we were using the Husqvarna Viking program, and that does not work on 8. And Windows has put in, and Viking has put in, a patch. And it's a free patch, and all they have to do is, if he's using the Husqvarna Viking, I think it's 5D program, he can just go on the Viking website, and they'll give him the patch.
Excellent. So the software doesn't run. Now, he says his software does run.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't write to the disk properly.
It doesn't write to the disk. Well, it's also a floppy, and it may be time to upgrade.
Yeah.
You
think? Does the Husqvarna use floppies, or what does it use?
Well, you know, a long time ago it did, but now they're using a CD, and they also, you can't use the program unless you're using what they call a dongle.
Yeah, I hate that. That's copy protection. And that's dumb because you have to have the machine. That's a good enough dongle, if you ask me. It's no good to use the software if you don't have a Husqvarna to do the sewing with.
Well, no, that's not necessarily the case, because I don't have a Viking sewing machine.
Ah.
But I use the 5D program.
Ah, so that's why they put copy protection on it.
Yeah, but the only way you can use the 5D program, or the now they've got a 6D, is that you must have the dongle.
That's a shame. I hate it when they do that. Well, thank you, Ronnie. I appreciate the tip. So they may go to the website of the manufacturer or of the software and see if there's an update for it. I think that's a good suggestion. Jonathan also thinks he might have an answer. Hi, Jonathan. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo.
How you doing, Jonathan? What do you think's going on?
Well, I have Windows 8.1, and I have a floppy drive.
Yeah.
And it gives me options on formatting, and it gives me partition unit size.
So maybe now 8.1 has changed how it writes to floppies. If your sewing machine could format the floppy, I would have the sewing machine format the floppy and then bring it over to your Windows 8.1 and see if it can read it and write to it. That's interesting. So 8.1 has some new settings for floppy disks.
Yeah, well, my computer is showing an allocation unit, and I have formatted different allocation unit sizes, and it's
I'm thinking you're right that maybe the default for Windows 8.1 is a different size allocation unit than it is for the XP or for the old machine.
And also, floppies used to use a file system called FAT12.
Yeah, those were the days. I think you're right. I mean, the file format could be different. We're now at FAT32. I think the thing to do is make sure you're formatting those floppies from the machine, if you can, to make sure that they're compatible with the machine. Jonathan, thank you. Good suggestion. See, we got a great team here. There's nothing we can't answer. Even sewing machines, floppies that don't work. Diane, Orange, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Well, my husband and I are getting ready to take a trip to Switzerland. It's our first time going to Europe. We both have iPhones, and I have an iPad, and we'll probably bring along a laptop because I'm a workaholic and I can't get away from it. Mike, and I've looked into, I listen to your show regularly, so I know we can't just go over there and use our iPhones because we don't have $200,000 to pay the phone company when we come back. So my solution was I went online and I found that the best carrier in Switzerland seems to be Swisscom.
That's right.
And I looked at what mobile Wi-Fi equipment they offer, and it's the Huawei E5330. So I started looking for an unlocked one here, and the only source I could find, I have to buy it from China, which makes me a little nervous.
Well, Huawei is a Chinese company, so that's why.
Okay.
So there's a couple of solutions to this. It sounds like, now, first of all, the hotel you're in will have Wi-Fi.
Right, but we're addicted to being able to look stuff up
mobile.
On the go.
And for travel, that's great because you can't get lost. So you're wandering around Geneva and you go, I don't know where the hotel is. You pop out your iPhone, you enter Google Maps, you enter the hotel's name, and it'll walk you home. Or
right.
It'll give you a bus. It's very handy.
And that way we can make phone calls on Skype and...
Right. So my advice is to keep the iPad and the laptop at home or at the hotel. at the hotel and use the Wi-Fi with those. But you can carry. But your iPhone is mobile, and that's useful. Now, who's your carrier on the iPhone?
AT&T.
Great.
And we went and looked at their international, and it's
expensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's now. How long are you going to be gone?
11 days total.
Yeah.
And we're not just going to be in Switzerland. We're going to go down to Milan, and we're going to go into the Black Forest in Germany. And that's the second question is, will the Swisscom when we cross over in the other countries?
So that makes it even more complicated now because you're in three different countries.
Well, actually four. We're going to go into
four. So you're in Germany, you're in Italy, you're in Switzerland, you're in France. So that means now that's changing, by the way. Early next year, every country in the EU will have a centralized kind of system that it should all work. But for now, in general,
yeah, that's gonna help me in June.
Yeah, in general, each country you'll need your own data plan. You know what I would say is continue to use Wi-Fi whenever possible, and every hotel you're at will have Wi-Fi. The easiest thing to do, this is what I do. You're only going to be gone 11 days. You can buy for your phone, say, 100 megabytes, which is about $100, and just be very judicious about when you use data. Turn off data all the time because, like, the email packages are downloading email all the time, and it's going to surprise you. But if you turn off data, except when you need it, when you're walking around looking for a map or a restaurant, that kind of thing. Turn it on, do what you need to do, and turn it off. You will easily fall within the 100 megabytes. That's a lot of data.
Yeah, except with my career, I need to have access to my emails. That's why.
Well,
I
you can't, but you will. But you will at the hotel. You want to have it on the road too.
Yeah, I mean, stuff is really time sensitive, and so.
So you want to be able to get email the whole time.
Right, and I want to be able to surf unlimited. That's why I was looking at the Huawei, because you know the Swisscom SIM card is really not very expensive, and we're spending most of our time in Switzerland.
All right. So, yeah. So is the Huawei thing like a MiFi? Is it like a credit card Wi-Fi access point? Is that what it is?
Yeah. It's a little device. It's a little mobile Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Hang on.
I have to take a break. But hang on. We'll talk a little bit about that. I think that's a good solution. We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's where Diane's going in June. Beautiful Switzerland. She's practicing her yodeling. She also wants nonstop, full-time, high-speed internet access. And this is the challenge, of course, is that she's not just going to be in Switzerland. She's also going to be in Germany and Italy and France. So, unfortunately, you know, while the Swiss carrier, Swisscom, is very good, and they for 49 francs, they sell the Huawei mobile travel hotspot. It does exactly what you want.
But do I have to get a subscription with that?
That includes the data, I believe. So what you'll be doing is, a couple of things you could do. You can wait till you get to Switzerland and get it there. It might be more convenient. You can go online and get it on Amazon or get it from Swisscom right now. You can also reserve it on the Swisscom site and collect it in the store, which might be the easiest thing for you to do. Let me give you the kind of the general travel information that everybody needs to know. In Europe and most of the world, they use a technology called GSM. Here in the United States, we have two technologies for our cell phones, GSM and CDMA. Verizon and Sprint are CDMA. You're lucky you're an AT&T. AT&T and T-Mobile both use GSM. So you can use a T-Mobile or AT&T phone almost anywhere in the world. With Verizon and Sprint, you'll have to explicitly go to them and say, I need a world phone. And they'll have a phone that has dual band, has GSM and CDMA. The iPhone, for instance, the iPhone 5 and later on Verizon, can work around the world. Now, you have a couple of choices with your phone. If you want to keep your phone number, you're going to have to pay for special international access. You can not pay for it and really pay when you get home. Or you can order data and phone service that is a little bit cheaper, but still way overpriced. From AT&T or T-Mobile. T-Mobile is unusual in one respect. They allow you slow edge access for free anywhere in Europe. But it's slow, but at least it's there. So that's a compelling reason to go with T-Mobile for frequent international travelers. If you're going to an individual country, we'll put this in the show notes, there's a great site called Prepaid with Data. It's a wiki, I've mentioned it many times, that shows you country by country what the best carriers are. And by the way, they agree Swisscom is the best.
Well, that's where I found the information.
Ah, smart
woman.
Because
I listen to you.
Ah.
So if you want to know tech, call Leo.
Yeah. So you can go to the Swisscom site and order this Huawei device. That's probably where you figured it out. Now that's not going to give you phone calls. That's only going to give you data. That Huawei device.
Which I can use Skype and pick up my messages and return phone calls. I'm fine with doing that. I'm a little bummed I can't get my text messages because people are used to texting me, but they're just going to have to get over that.
Texting can be expensive. You can tell your friends, hey, let's use WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger or some other internet-based messenger instead.
Yeah.
And if you can convince your friends to do that, that's great because it is expensive. Now, when you get to Switzerland, you can either buy this Huawei device or even buy a, you know, one option you have is to get AT&T to unlock your phone. Most cases, if you're in good standing and you've had the phone for 6 months or more, you could just do that online with AT&T or bring it into a store and they'll unlock it. And that means you could get a Swiss SIM in your iPhone, and that would include data. And that's usually cheaper, but there's a negative. You lose your American phone number.
Right.
You get a Swiss phone number.
Well, and that's fine on a temporary basis, but now then I have to buy one for me, one for my husband. You know, I mean, and then that, by the time you add that up, I'm figuring I might as well buy the Wi-Fi device, connect both of our phones and the iPad to do whatever we want.
Exactly.
We can use it the next trip.
You're exactly right. You own it. You can keep it. You can use it again. You'll have to put more, you know, data on it because you get that from Swisscom. That device probably can be used in the other countries as well. You'll just have to get, when you get to Italy or France or Germany, you just get a SIM card in those countries, pop that in. And
Germany and France were only like crossing over for the day. I'll go through withdrawals, but I could survive for 8 hours without it and turn it off and then... You know, when we go into Italy, that's where we're spending 3 days.
Do it in Italy. This is a great solution. You have to make sure. In fact, it may be cheaper to do this than to get the hotel Wi-Fi. Sometimes hotels charge so much for Wi-Fi that it's cheaper.
Exactly.
You know, even an internet cafe might be more expensive. Wi-Fi is everywhere in Switzerland. So that isn't. You know, you're always going to be able to get online at a cafe, at a coffee shop, at the hotel. But having the Wi-Fi card means you can walk around mobile, use your data. It's truly unlimited. Swisscom's good about that.
And the other thing I'm worried about is, like you said, every hotel, every cafe that you go into is going to want, I don't know, $20 or so. And by the time you add all that up, you might as well buy this little device, but I'm still nervous about ordering one direct from China, although I'm running out of time. If I'm going to do it, I need to get it back.
You don't need to do that. You can get it from Amazon.com. If you search there, it's $61 Prime, which means you can get it overnight. You can also order it on the Swisscom website and have them hold it till you're there. So there are, you know, they sell it directly there. That's 49 Swiss francs. I'm not sure.
But is that locked to them at Swisscom, or is that an unlocked device that I can use in other countries?
That is an interesting question. I would guess it's not, but I'll have to read. And this includes a SIM card that gives you some data as well. You'll have to have a valid passport. This is for international travelers, so they give you a special deal. They don't want people in Switzerland using it, apparently. You know, the Swiss to use it. So, you can always visit swisscom.ch and see it there. A number of people here. We have somebody in the chat room who's Swiss, who says yes, that's a good way to go. He says it is not SIM locked, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it's nice. We got our Swiss expert beatmaster in the chat room.
Excellent, because I found a Swisscom store right in the airport where we land Zurich. So if I order it ahead and have it there waiting for us when we go to pick it up, then we should be good to go.
And I've done this, by the way. I traveled to Australia, used a MiFi card, and it really is probably the most affordable and certainly the most convenient way. And you've got three devices. You can use up to 10 on this thing, so it works pretty well. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much. I think I know which way I'm going to go.
Good.
And
have a great trip.
Oh, well, thank you. We're very excited.
Sounds fun.
We've never been to Europe before. So.
Oh, you're gonna just have a wonderful time.
It is
so great. Well, have a great time. Have a great trip. That's the, and then we should tell you, the Huawei, HUAWEI Mobile Travel Hotspot, or the, they call it the E5331. And you can get that online at Amazon, or often it's the best idea to get it when you get in country. Then you'll know it'll work and all of that. I'm glad we could solve that problem for you. 8888 Ask Leo. We got so much information about so many things, including this wonderful wiki, the Prepaid with Data wiki, that we'll put that in the show notes at techguylabs.com. This is episode 1084. The website is free. There's no charge. Audio and video from every show is up there. The show notes, James DeRuvo's writing those down when he doesn't have a Boy Scout jamboree to go to. He's a scoutmaster, so, hey, we let him off sometimes. And then, of course, from my office, Josh Windisch goes in there, adds audio, video, and then breaks it up question by question. So you can say, hey, what was that first question in hour number two? And you can go right to that. If you've got suggestions, too, we'd love to hear from you. We've got a comment section. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're giving Chris Marquardt the day off today because he's up at Everest or Kathmandu or something like that with his photographic workshop. He does this every year. He goes up to base camp and put a great place for pictures and great experience, too. So that's awesome. Dr. Mom's telling me AT&T International Wireless Roaming is $120 a month for 800 megabytes. That's usually what I get. And it's expensive, admittedly, especially if you're not using the whole month. I mean, it's not bad for a month. But that's usually what I get just because I'm lazy. And then, you know, they get a little extra money because I forget to cancel it when I get back home and blah, blah, blah. But it is convenient to just be able to use your phone and so forth. And I'm just really careful. You know, you got to keep an eye on the usage and so forth. I'm careful to keep it under those 800 because it gets very expensive very quickly. Verizon is terrible. Verizon's extremely expensive. T-Mobile's my favorite because it's free, slow internet, but at least you've got internet. But everybody agrees that for traveling, you can't beat T-Mobile to give you at least a little bit of internet, no matter where you go, for no cost. Mike's on the line from Whittier, California. Our next call. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Good afternoon, Leo. It's good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Okay. This Christmas, we got our daughter, she's freshman in high school, we got her a mid-price laptop, and she gave old dad her a hand-me-down. It's not a cheapy, but it's a lower price, not mid-range. But anyway, I gave my son my behemoth Asus desktop, which he's turned into a gaming. But my problem is I'd like all
this
she
nice.
Wants. Off
Everybody's of, handing it off. I love that.
I know.
That's
I know.
Good. You guys don't waste anything.
We're just a Southern family that does stuff like that.
I
we
like
pass
it.
Everything down. Clothes, shoes, you name it.
That's how it ought to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I need to do is all she said that she wants off of this original, it's a Samsung, the first one, is she just wants her photos off of there, and then I want to completely reset it because my mother back at East, I'm just going to send it to her because hers has crashed, and I'm in the middle of writing my first novel, and I'm going to have to get me something a little more mid-range or upper range, yeah. Whatnot. But how do I go about just taking the photos off of this and resetting this Samsung back to its original Windows 7 Home Premium system.
So it's very simple. The simplest thing would be get a USB drive or a USB key. They're not expensive. You should have one anyway for backup. So So go down to the big box store for $80. You can get a terabyte of backup, which I'm sure is bigger than the internal drive on that whole.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then it's good to have that as just a regular thing. You make a regular backup. I bet you don't have backups, and that's always a risk.
Well, on my desktop and stuff, I do. It all goes to Carbonite. Yeah. But
oh, good man. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, if you're, writing the great American novel, the last thing you want to do is have to start over because you lost
it. Right. Well, you got me into Carbonite when I started this novel 8 or 9 months ago.
Hallelujah.
And everything. So.
Yeah.
But
that's a smart thing. So now, and then resetting it should be pretty easy. It's Windows 7. In many cases, I'm pretty sure on this Samsung, it's the case you'll have a recovery partition. So you'll boot into recovery, and you can wipe the drive and start all over again. I don't know if you got any disks with it or if it gave you the opportunity to make recovery disks. That's another way to do it. But I bet that is it a netbook? Does it have a optical drive?
You know what? I do not know. I know it will take DVDs.
All right, good. All right. So that means you'll be able to burn a disc if you don't have one. But you also, in many cases, can just run a recovery mode. It'll be a Samsung application on there somewhere. And
okay, will that get rid of her little password that she's got on there as well?
You'll need to unlock it first because it won't let you do anything. But then once you do, yes, it'll start over.
Okay. Well, that's all.
Yeah, and by the way, my recommendation when you give away a computer is to always do that. Back up your data and wipe that computer. Bring it back down to the way it was. Yeah. The other thing before you send it off to mom is I would, as a courtesy to her, do all the Windows updates. Get it up to the latest version,
Right.
That way she doesn't have any risk of using it. And you might even if mom's not super sophisticated, set up, have an administrator account, but then set up a limited user or standard account so that she'll use that day in, day out. That'll keep her a lot safer.
Yeah, because all she does is Facebook and emails.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Facebook can get you in trouble. Email can get you in trouble. You know, you get a, sometimes people.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a good idea. Yeah.
Well, if I could write my novel on this Nexus 5 phone I'm talking to you on, I'd do that, but my fingers are too fat for this touchscreen.
So,
but I do love this phone. It's the best phone I've ever had.
Chances are you have a Samsung application. They call it their recovery solution. And you'll see when you go to the recovery solution that there's three different things you can do. You want to do a restore, and then they'll say, what kind of restore? And you're going to say, complete restore, and that will wipe everything out, and it will bring it back to the way it was when you got the computer home, and that's what you
want. Yeah, because my mother has one that was built for my uncle. He's pretty well off and stuff, and a guy custom built it for her, and it's way over her head, my head, everybody else's.
Yeah.
And now she's having so much trouble with it, and her being on fixed income and stuff like that, she doesn't have time or money to have it repaired anytime it breaks down.
This sounds like a very kind thing. And as I said, the thing to do is before you send it off to her, set it up so that she can use it safely and easily. And the number one thing to do if you're using Windows or Mac or Linux is not to run as an administrator. The viruses, the malware, they get the same permissions you get. So if you're not running it as a, you know, as a god, as a full administrator, neither will the virus. It won't even be able to install in most cases, and that's an excellent excellent thing. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We move on to Rob in, is it Lolo, Montana? Is that how you say it? Lolo? Hello, Rob. No. Lolo. I don't hear anything out of Rob. It's dead silent. That's not a good sign. Let's try Tim. There he goes in Minnesota. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call today.
You're welcome. Ironically, Rob's call was about dropped calls, so maybe that's what happened to him. What can I do for you, Tim?
Well, I have this application error on Skype. I don't have a camera connected to it. It says application error, exception EIN, out error in module IP camera, error 103. So when somebody tries to call me, I have to hit OK before I can accept their call.
Well, don't you want that? Oh, you don't want the error, though. Yeah. Okay.
I don't want the error. So, I've been searching for a fix on this thing, and I don't understand it.
You know, error messages are an error in the first place because the only person who knows what that message means is the guy who wrote it. And I don't know why, and it's common practice, every computer, program, and operating system spit errors that are useless, sometimes worse than useless, because they give you an idea that maybe has nothing to do with it. However, saying that since it said it's having trouble seeing the camera, it may be a camera driver issue. It's funny because once you click OK, it works fine.
Yeah, then the calls come in, and then I can receive their call. But application error, IO error.
You know what I would try doing? Maybe you've done this already. Uninstall and reinstall.
Skype, okay.
Yeah, because it may be that Skype is missing a file that it needs or whatever. It could be a driver issue with the camera. Make sure nothing else is using the camera. Sometimes that's a problem, too. It sounds to me like a driver's crashing. You're clicking OK. It reloads and works fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, I want to mention NatureBox. It's snack time, and if it's snack time in your house or at work, you certainly, the last thing you want to do for snack time is go to that machine in the back there with all the high fructose corn syrup treats and all of that stuff, all the saturated fats and the trans fats. Nature Box is nutrition designed to always be delicious and healthful. Yeah, bring me a Nature. Burke has brought me a Nature Box. So this is what happens. There are three Nature Box sizes. They come to you monthly, postage paid in the United States. Once you get your box, you'll find delicious treats inside. And there's a huge variety. Nature Box will let you choose, for instance, vegan treats if you wish, or gluten-conscious, or lactose-free, or soy-free. Almost any diet, you know, non-GMO, nut-free. You can also choose by taste, savory, sweet, or spicy. I like getting the They have 100 different snacks, over 100. And I like getting the assortment because you never know what you're going to get. And by the way, I really love this. They work with Feeding America to provide food to millions of Americans who go hungry. They've donated 150,000 meals, so they give back, which I really love. Nature Box is so delicious. I want you to try it right now. Every one of the Nature Box treats has one thing. They all have one thing in common: zero trans fats, zero high fructose corn syrup, nothing artificial, no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or colors. They're all really tasty. I have the box here. This is, see, I love the mango almond bites. Really love those. The South Pacific plantains with sea salt. Ooh, garden tomato crunchies, tomato flavored almonds. Kim, stop looking at me like that. Santa Fe corn sticks. Is your mouth watering yet? You will love the lemon pucker pistachios. These are so good. Pistachio nuts, sea salt, lemon juice. Can you get better than that? So here's the deal. Go to naturebox.com/twit. You're going to get 50% off your first box. naturebox.com/twit. Healthful snacks that are delicious, delivered straight to your door. I love the internet. Nature Box. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. We got Rob back. He keeps getting dropped calls on his Verizon phone, and apparently that's exactly what happened. Glad to get you back on. Thank you, Rob. From Lolo, Montana. Are you named after Olympian Lolo Jones?
Not that I know of. It's probably an Indian name.
Lolo, I love it.
Yeah.
As somebody with two L's in his name, Leo Laporte should live in Lolo. I think it's good.
You should.
Yes. What can I do for you?
Well, here's my problem. In fact, this is sort of like taking your car to the dealer, only this time it actually happened. Yeah. This is typical, but my girlfriend and I both have Verizon phones. Mine's a new iPhone. Hers is that new HTC television screen thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be talking, and all of a sudden she'll be saying, "Are you still there? Are you still there?"
Happens to me all the time. It's so frustrating. Guess what? I'm on Verizon too. But I think it happens on all cell carriers. It's just let's not get crazy here. This is a miracle. We're walking down the street in the middle of nowhere, and it kind of works. We've gotten so used to the fact that it mostly works that when it doesn't, it's a little frustrating. But, you know, I mean, is Lolo rural?
Yeah, we're fairly rural, but I have a cell tower within, half a mile of the place.
Yeah, well. And so you got five bars or four bars?
Four, yes. And if nothing else, at least I can tell her that, well, Leo said this is normal. Because
it is.
It's crazy.
Now, how often does it happen?
Oh, we'll talk 8 or 10 times a day, and it'll happen 3 or 4 times a day at a minimum.
Isn't that frustrating? You know, I think it is not unusual to have it happen. It happens to me every time, every day, probably half of my calls. But I don't, I think one of the reasons you don't hear more about it is that people don't use their cell phones for calls that much anymore.
Yeah.
Let me see what the chat room thinks. Chat room, does that seem like an abnormal situation that calls, it doesn't sound like it's dropped. You can still hear her. She just can't hear you.
Correct.
That happens to me, too. I think this is not unusual, to be honest. And so tell her that. are you driving or are you sitting still?
Well, I'm disabled, so I'm just sitting around the house here.
And is she moving around?
No, she does sometimes, but most of the time she's calling from a stationary location as well.
Yeah. Well, if you're near a cell tower, a cell booster is not going to make much of a difference. Four bars is more than adequate.
Yeah.
It's not unusual to drop a call if you pass between towers. You know, the handoff is often where calls are dropped. I have to say it's not unusual for me to have this happen myself. Chat room says it seems to happen to them. I don't know if there's a fix for it except just to call back.
Yeah.
The thing is, once we went to from analog to digital on cell phones, this stepped up because analog will degrade. So, you know, remember the old days, you go and you'd kind of hear them and kind of not and stuff. That was degrading analog. But now with digital, it just stops working.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Because I was just thinking, you know, these, although at the time, what, 5, 7, 8 years ago when we used to have those stupid track phones, I never had this.
No, because they were analog.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that this is not unusual, unfortunately. Maybe it's a Verizon thing. I'm using Verizon, too, but I seem to remember it happening on every... In fact, iPhone users for years complained about AT&T, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if nothing else, I can tell her that Uncle Leo said it's normal, don't blame me. So that's a good reason to call.
Exactly. I'm sorry not to have any solution for you, Rob. You're getting enough, you know, signal, so it can't be that. It's just an unreliable carrier. Speaking of unreliable, what is... Oh, my gosh. That fixed it. Did you just cut the wire? So, a little drama happening here in the studio. Apparently, we have a giant clock that for a while was only playing a song. And by the way, it plays a minute-long song at the top of the hour. For some reason, it's now... So John came in to fix it. He got on a ladder last hour. You know, my studio manager. He fixed it. So now it doesn't go off at the top of the hour. It goes off at 9 minutes before the hour. So John has left, but Burke is here. So Burke just, he hears it, he comes in. He comes in with clippers, and he cuts the wire. And there was a bit of a, are you okay, Burke? Did it hurt? There was quite a bit of a. Okay, well, that clock's dead. But you know, you had to do it. You had to do it, Burke. I'll defend you. That thing was gonna just go crazy for another minute, playing. It sounded like an ice cream truck was in town. Half the audience has gone outside to get the ice cream. Daryl's next, a truck driver. He's on the road. Hi, Daryl. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's great.
I just had a few questions about Linux and why it is. First, is it really like 100% virus-proof?
No computer program in the world is 100% secure. All of them can have flaws. It's not possible. They're human beings who write these. And, you know, it's like asking, is any human perfect? No, of course not.
Gotcha. And why did Microsoft take a different road?
Well, Windows, it's actually pretty straightforward. When Microsoft created Windows, back with Windows 3.0, 3.1 in the early 90s, there were no viruses, there were no security threats. Now, Microsoft, of course, over time has improved Windows greatly, and the big jump happened with Windows XP and Windows 2000, when they got rid of kind of the Windows 3.1, 95, 98 style Windows, and they went to a solid XP style NT kernel. And that really was robust. But, unfortunately, Microsoft makes its money by preserving compatibility with older hardware and software. They call it legacy. And because Microsoft's in business, they've always supported legacy code. And that has left them open, left them vulnerable. Linux is designed from the ground up to be secure. So it is more secure. I'll talk a little more when we come back about this. A good subject. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time for hour three of the Tech Guy Show. We're talking about computers, internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, sewing machines that use floppy disks, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Our website, techguylabs.com. We were talking to Daryl. I don't know if he's still there. You've probably gone in a whole nother state by now.
No, I'm still here. I had one more question
sure.
After this one. So,
I love the question because We often mention Linux. It's a free operating system. It was created in the early 90s and has been maintained over the years. The timing was perfect. The guy who created it was a Finnish graduate student, and he gave it away. He basically said, here. And the internet was kind of taken off just at this time, and people from all over the world kind of started contributing to it. It was really the birth of the open source movement, and Linux benefited greatly. So you're using Linux all the time. Most web servers run Linux. Of course, Android phones are based on Linux. And it is inherently more secure because it's based on Unix, and the permissions system that Unix uses is inherently more secure than the way Windows works. Macintosh is even more secure. It's also based on a Unix foundation. Windows suffers because it's old, but not only old, but because Microsoft really wants to maintain compatibility with older systems. That's why this is a big deal that they're cutting off XP. It's important for them to do that so that they can move forward. Question two.
Composer slash electronic dance producer, and I just wanted to know if you knew anything about music software.
Yeah, well, my son, who also is big into EDM, he uses Logic Pro, which is a great piece of software from Apple. But of course, you need to have a Macintosh. A lot of music people do use Macintoshes. There is a great variety of software like Ableton's Live, which is great for live performances. There's a lot of Windows software like Cakewalk. Computers and music seem to go together. The one advantage that I think Apple has is the iPad, and musicians and DJs have really seemed to take into the iPad. So there's a ton of software there for controlling music and for creating music. I think an iPad is a great choice.
Interesting. I'm using Fruity Loops right now, and I
Fruity Loops.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, I love Fruity Loops.
It's great. I've been using it for years now, but I feel like I need to move up. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not good at using it. I'm not really sure. I mean, I don't know.
Fruity Loops is really about a MIDI looping program, basically. And that's what Fruity Loops, and that's, or FL sometimes, so people don't have to say Fruity Loops. I think Logic Pro is a reasonable alternative to Fruity Loops, and it will take you to another level. A lot of professionals use Logic Pro. It does require a Macintosh, though.
All righty. And what computer would you recommend if I was going to get a Mac? What would you recommend?
Well, since you're a truck driver, get a MacBook Pro.
Okay.
Yeah. Great, great, great hardware, and as you probably know, it's true of Fruity Loops, true of most music software, the number of tracks and the density of tracks and the complexity of tracks really means that, the more complex the music is, the faster the processor, the more RAM you need. Max it out if you can afford it. And of course, many, many albums are mastered on Pro Tools on a Macintosh. I'm not a fan of Pro Tools. I think it is fairly antiquated and difficult to learn. I really like Logic Pro. I really do. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Justin in Alexander City, California. He's on the line. Hi, Justin.
Alabama.
Alabama. Oh, yeah, I misread it. Alexander City, Alabama.
Right. Well, first, I appreciate you doing this show and all the shows on the Twit Network. I really enjoy them.
Thank you. We love doing what we're doing. We're very lucky.
Well, my question has to do with audio streaming. I work with a company in Alabama, and we produce high school athletic events for a radio network. And we can't really afford, satellite to stream, to get the feed out there to the affiliates. So what we do currently is I go on site and just plug in the audio and send a stream on site to each radio affiliate. But sometimes we'll run into problems with the audio buffering or things like that, and I was just wondering what you would suggest.
So you're streaming it. They're playing it back in real time. You can't just upload a file to them.
Right. It's in real time.
Yeah. The internet is really bad for real time because it's unpredictable. It was never designed for prioritizing packets to say these must arrive. They must arrive. And for streaming audio or video, they not only have to arrive, they have to arrive in a timely fashion in order, because you got to play them back in a timely fashion in order. And so the internet, because it's kind of unpredictable, is not ideal for that kind of thing. It's great for email, great for websites. Packets can arrive out of order and be reassembled. But for streaming, it's challenging. And I'm not sure. You know, we use here, we use ISDN lines. They're not super fast. They're a phone line, digital phone lines, but they're point-to-point. So they don't have to go out over the public internet where anything can happen to them. They're consistent in the amount of time it takes to get from my studio, the Brick House Studios here, down to Sherman Oaks in Southern California, where the engineers are, where Nathan is. That's almost instantaneous because it's a point-to-point line. Very few radio stations will use internet for anything that needs to be real-time. For instance, answering your call, you're down there in Sherman Oaks, I'm up here in Northern California. We wouldn't be able to have a conversation over the public internet because there'd be too much delay. It'd be difficult. So that's a great question. People like Telos have started to make boxes that are designed to do this. Telos is what we use for ISDN. They also have internet protocol stuff they're trying out. I'm not convinced yet that it's ready for prime time, although the interesting conundrum we face is that the phone companies no longer want to support ISDN. They invented it, and radio stations jumped on it, and I've been using ISDN and radio for a couple of decades now. But it requires the phone company have a separate switch, a digital switch, and since the market for it is very limited, I'm probably the only person in Petaluma who has an ISDN line. They'd prefer not to support them. So I think they're phasing these out, and at some point radio stations are going to have to face the same problem you're facing right now, Justin, which is how do you get content streamed out in a timely fashion? The internet is not ideal. In television, they use fiber optic direct lines, similar to ISDN, but they're much, much faster. And they're direct connects, and they're expensive, very expensive. Just good question. I wish I had an answer for you, but there isn't one right now. That's not hugely expensive. Walter Burbank, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Walter.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Walter, welcome.
I'm so happy to talk to you. I've been wanting to call you for months.
Thanks for your patience. I know you've been on hold for a while, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll get right to it. Two questions. I just got a Windows 8 machine from Dell. I realized I got an 8 and I upgraded 8.1. It didn't cost any extra.
Yeah, no, you should. In fact, everybody who's using 8.1 now should add update 1 to it, or you won't get any patches after next month. Microsoft is demanding that you do that, so get going.
Okay, yeah, I was deciding between going with 7 or 8.
Actually, 8 with 8.1 is not bad.
Yeah, I've noticed, but you know what? I'm a big fan of TrueCrypt. Ever since you got me hooked on it with the
security
now.
Good.
But it doesn't work on 8.
What? Is that true? I didn't know that.
It doesn't. Well, you can do containers, but you can't do the whole
disk encryption. Right. Yeah. That probably has something to do with UEFI. So TrueCrypt is an open source free encryption program that will encrypt individual files or folders, but also has a feature called whole disk encryption. I would just, you know, if that's the case, use FileVault, the built-in Windows 8 encryption. I think it's quite good. Of course, it's closed source, but I think it does the job very fast and effective. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking to Walter in Burbank. I said the wrong name. It's not FileVault. That's the Mac operating system encryption. It's BitLocker. But, you know, it turns out, and I didn't know this, you said you have Windows 8 8.1?
I have 8.1. I upgraded from the 8, but I didn't see BitLocker. I was poking around looking
for
it.
Yeah, you have to have Pro, but apparently Windows 8.1 will automatically encrypt the storage. This is now the default.
By any chance, is 7 doing that? Because I had a problem with my computer.
No, 7 is not doing it. So BitLocker is available on professional and enterprise version of Windows, but encryption is now included with all versions of 8.1, and if you have a newer machine, it's on by default. It can't do it in some of the older machines that don't have secure boot, but any new machine or machine that came with Windows 8 will have pervasive device encryption, which is great. If you lose your device, no one will get into it. Now, the way it unlocks it, and you probably notice this, is you have to use your Microsoft account to log in.
Right.
And at that point, the certificate, which is stored with Microsoft, is exchanged and the disk is unlocked. So unless you've somehow turned it off or you have a machine that doesn't support it, an older machine, you have, in fact, all your stuff is encrypted in Windows 8.1.
That's great.
Yeah.
But they have the key, though, Microsoft. It's not something I can keep.
Yeah, if you don't trust Microsoft, you're out of luck. But you know what? If you don't trust Microsoft, you're out of luck no matter what. Right? Okay. I guess TrueCrypt, if you don't trust Microsoft, TrueCrypt might help. But remember, when you use TrueCrypt, once you log into Windows, TrueCrypt unlocks it. If Microsoft were malicious, at that point they could send all the data they want back to the home office. So, you got to trust. Whoever wrote the operating system, if you're using their operating system, you are implicitly trusting them.
Yes, that's true. One more quick question. I'm a Sage TV fan, and I'm not sure if you know about Sage.
I do, yeah.
They got bought out by Google and then ruined.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Alternate.
Yeah, they're gone, basically, yeah.
Is there an alternative to Sage TV?
I think Myth is still around, isn't it? Myth TV? Myth was the other open source DVR, and nobody's bought them yet. So Sage was all software, right? And you had to get a capture card, as I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Myth is the same thing. MythTV.org, MythTV.org. But nowadays I think a lot of people are using XBMC and their XBMC derivatives like Plex. In fact, my current favorite is Plex. I would look into that as well.
Okay. I'll check that out.
Yeah. Myth TV, you're going to, much like Sage, you're going to do your own. Was Sage Windows or did you use Linux?
I used Windows.
Okay. So Myth TV is a kind of a Linux distribution that does all of that. So that may be a non-starter for you. Take a look at Plex. Plex has an amazing range of capabilities, lots of plugins. I just think it's a great solution for people who want to basically turn their computers into home theater PCs.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. It's good to talk to you. Moving on to Ken in Rhode Island. Hi, Ken. Leo Laporte, the tech.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call, of course.
Thanks for calling.
So today being Sunday, I'm determined to undo a big computer sin. And so I want to start using some sort of a password management software, and I'm totally confused. And basically, I have an iPhone on my smartphone, and I use Outlook with mail and contacts. So I'd like to get your suggestion on what to use and be able to sync between the two and hopefully not go through the cloud.
So there are a lot of password managers. Yeah. I strongly recommend that people use one. Use the password manager of your choice. I'll tell you which one I prefer and why, but there's 1Password is a very big one, especially in the Mac community. Dashlane is a newer one a lot of people like, but I use LastPass, and I'll tell you why I prefer LastPass. When we talk about security, my friend Steve Gibson, who does our security show on the Twit podcast network, uses a term he calls TNO, or trust no one. The ideal security would protect you even against an operating system, for instance, that was giving stuff to the NSA. It would be you would encrypt stuff in such a way that only you could get access to it. And of all the password managers I know of, LastPass is the only one I know of that is truly trust no one. So I understand your concern, for instance, is that password manager might store your passwords in the cloud. LastPass does. That's a great convenience because you can install LastPass on your phone and your desktop and your tablet and log into it on any computer and have access to it. But LastPass does not have access to your passwords or your content. Only you do, because it's encrypted in a way that only you have the key.
Okay, now do you let LastPass generate those individual passwords?
They have an excellent generator, which I highly recommend.
Okay.
They can generate long, very random passwords that will always be better than the password you generate. And the beauty of a password manager is it encourages you to use strong passwords, and it remembers them for you. There is only one password you have to remember, and that's the password manager's password, the password for LastPass. So I do have a long strong password for LastPass, but I generated that one by using a mnemonic. So
right.
I'm able to recreate it. And there are lots of ways you could do that. Use the first letter of your favorite passage from a book. Or I've heard people use the last names of the last 20 presidents, capitalizing for Republicans. There's all sorts of ways to do it. A long sentence with punctuation, spaces, upper and lower case, that's not a bad one either. The idea is something that you can easily remember, but that is not easily brute forced or guessed.
So then when you go to log into, say, your online banking and you've let the software create this long password, how do you actually insert that password into your login?
If you're using a desktop computer, they have plugins for all the browsers and it just does it.
Oh, really?
So you go to the bank and it fills it in. If you are on a smartphone, it's a little more tricky. On Android, they've actually added the capability to fill in. But on Macs, iPhones and iPads, which I often use on Apple devices, I just cut and paste. So I will go to the bank website, and then I will go and launch LastPass. And there's a very easy, you tap the bank's name, and it says copy the password. You say yes. Mm-hmm. Then you double tap the home button to switch back over to the bank page, paste in the password. That works. It's a little extra. But
sure.
It's not too bad, not too onerous, and I've been doing it for years, and it gives me some real confidence that my passwords are safe.
Okay, great. That's really helpful.
I'm a big fan. LastPass is free. There's a premium version that gives you more capabilities in mobile, and that's $1 a month. It's very affordable. And I'll tell you, we trust it enough that we use the enterprise version as well for my company. So all of our passwords are created by LastPass and stored by LastPass, the enterprise version at the company level. So I put my money where my mouth is. That is, we're absolutely committed to that.
And they have an app for the iPhone then too, you said?
Absolutely. iPhone, iPad, Android, Windows Phone. There's no platform that I can't find LastPass on. I highly recommend it.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. My pleasure. This is one I don't mind saying over and over. I really think it's important. It's really key to security. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Yeah, I highly recommend, if you don't want to use LastPass, that's fine, because there are many, many choices. But LastPass is the one I use, and I've had great results. It works everywhere. It's very convenient as it can be. You know, security and convenience are often at odds. Often you trade off a little bit of convenience for more security. But I think nowadays that's probably a worthwhile trade. I recommend it. 8888, and we did a special, by the way. It's on our Twit Space site. I just kind of sat down and installed LastPass in a system. They have excellent tutorials, but if you want to see our special, it's at twit.tv/specials. I think it's number 199. I just walked through it, and you can see a video of me walking through it just to get an idea of it. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Thomas is next in Vancouver, Washington. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's a little bit rainy up here in the northwest, but we're handling the rain.
When is it not rainy in the Pacific Northwest? When?
Most likely during the summer and some parts of fall.
All right.
And do you happen to know of a person by the name of Charlie Jenkins?
I don't.
You don't?
No.
He told me that he knows you from when he worked at a college down in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. My question is, I'm using Windows 8.1, and I've been using the 4-digit PIN and picture password to quickly log in and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm having issues setting one, like recreating it or something like that. I'm unable to use it completely. I've talked to Microsoft several times about this issue, and they've rebooted me in safe mode. And they just left me hanging in safe mode. The first time I did...
Did it work in safe mode?
No, it did not, actually.
So what's happening? One of the nice things I think about Windows 8, although it's less secure, is they give you a variety of ways to log in. They do that for a reason. Windows 8 wants you, in general, when you first log in, certainly, to use your Microsoft password. So I log in with my Outlook.com email address and my Microsoft password, which, of course, because I generated it with LastPass, is extremely long and very difficult to enter. And this is one drawback to having good passwords. LastPass isn't running yet. So I have to open up my phone, look at the password, type it in by hand. It's a real pain. Microsoft, I guess, realized that. So they've added other ways of logging in on Windows 8. I use the PIN. It's less secure. It's only four digits. But it is a lot more convenient than trying to remember my Outlook password. They also have a picture password, which is kind of fun, where you trace a pattern on a picture. And you choose the picture and you choose the pattern. I think that's kind of cool. But what's happening, Thomas? When you try to use these, what goes wrong? It doesn't work?
Yeah, it doesn't work at all.
So you have to use your Outlook password most of the time?
Yeah.
And that's a pain.
Yeah, it is. And I just want to quickly get on the computer to get some information real quick.
You call Microsoft. They know more than I do. I presume you tried resetting it, starting over again with a new PIN and a new picture and all of that.
Yeah.
Is it a touch screen?
No, I'm using the basic two-monitor system, no touch screens.
Two monitors might also be part of the issue. I think you probably shouldn't try to use the picture password. That's touch-focused. So I don't even know. I guess you could use a mouse. I don't even know how you use that without a touch screen. But do the PIN. I use the PIN, and I just use the keyboard to enter in that PIN each time, and that seems pretty good. I'm afraid if Microsoft couldn't help you, I'm not going to have much more success, Thomas. It's hard for me to tell from over here what's wrong with your system. Christopher in La Jolla, California. Hi, Christopher. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey.
Hey, Leo. I just had a question about, I have the iPhone 4S, and my girlfriend recently got the Samsung S5 Galaxy. I was just curious, what's the better option, upgrading to the 5 or waiting till the 6 or switching over to the Samsung Galaxy? Because I really like her phone.
We got a little girlfriend jealousy going, a little phone jealousy going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, immediately the first thing you see as an iPhone 4S user is how much a bigger screen can be of use.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You have a tiny screen, a 3.5-inch screen. She's got a 5-inch screen. It's a big difference.
Yeah, my whole phone can pretty much fit in her screen.
I know. So. Actually, Samsung had some ads along those lines, as I remember. I'm not a big fan of the Samsung phones. I think one thing Samsung does that Apple does not is they junk up the phone with a lot of stuff you cannot uninstall, Samsung apps and apps from the carriers, and it uses up a lot of space and it gets in my way, and I really don't like that. On the other hand, I do think Android has eclipsed iPhone a little bit. You know, we're going to get a new iPhone probably, if they stick to their normal schedule, September. But one thing that you might want to do is wait until June. That's the month for the Worldwide Developers Conference. Apple's one conference of the year now. WWDC that's going to be in just a couple of weeks, June 2nd, will certainly give us some, at least, tips, some hints as to what to expect with the next generation iPhone. We'll probably see iOS 8 there, some of the features. They might start talking about the watch that Apple's strongly rumored to be working on, and they might give you some idea about what kind of phone, although typically they don't pre-announce phones. It wouldn't be a good bad if I know you can wait 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you really love your iPhone and you love the apps, you don't have to change. I think I'm almost certain Apple's going to get a much bigger screen on the next phone. They understand that people want bigger screens.
Yeah, because like I like the operating system for Apple, but I just don't like the phone itself. It's just small, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you're a couple of generations behind, so that's one thing. I would wait if you can. You like iOS. You're happy with the iPhone. You've probably invested a lot of money in iOS apps that you'd hate to have to reduplicate. I would say stick with it if you can. There will be a new, bigger iPhone, I'm almost certain, this fall. And and how big, how much bigger is a question? Will it be as big as the S5? Probably not, but we don't know. The rumors are that it will be a 4.7-inch screen. Actually, that's a pretty good size. That's, you know, one thing you might notice when you play with your girlfriend's S5 is that it's big in the hand. It's kind of hard to hold. I think 4.7, which is a little bit smaller, is about as big as you can go with a phone and still make it comfortable to hold and use with one hand. So my suspicion is, knowing that this is a priority for Apple, the one-hand operation, they'll do 4.7, and I think you'll like 4.7. I think that's just about the right size. So, yeah, you know what? My inclination is wait. Use your girlfriend's phone if she'll let you once in a while just to check in. But it is a big shift, and if you're really happy with the iPhone, I would stick with the iPhone. I use Android. I did switch a couple of years ago. Big iPhone fan, waiting in line 3 hours for the first iPhone, and loved it for years. It really was a revolution in what these devices could do, how powerful they were, how easy to use they were. But Apple, you know, we were talking about Microsoft being trapped a little bit by legacy, by history. I think Apple's a little trapped by history, too. They don't want to move too far, too fast for their customers. And that's allowed the Android manufacturers to leap ahead, I think, in, not just in screen size, but in capabilities and power. I just feel like we have we're a little, the Android's a little bit ahead. And this will be a chance for Apple to see if it can catch up. So watch June 2nd, WWDC. See what they say there. See if it's anything that makes you sit up and take notice. 8888 Ask Leo. One more break still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to be pre-recording for future shows on Friday. This is, I mean, I know it's hard to get in sometimes during the radio show. But Friday from 1 to 4 Pacific, that is 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern time, 8888 Ask Leo, the same phone number. I'll be here answering calls Friday, May 23rd. So if you've had a hard time getting in the past, this will be a kind of a special time. This should be easier to get through. And I guess we got Heather coming in, I'm not sure, to screen the calls. Let's go back to the phones. Debbie's in Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Debbie.
Oh, hi, Leo. Yes, I'd like to know what type of tablet or iPad would be best for some senior ladies who would like to text, but due to vision and manual dexterity problems, one of them had a stroke, can only use voice control to text.
Mm.
Is it possible? And if so, which would be best and what brand?
Yeah, almost any tablet will allow you to give it voice commands. Texting, however, can mean a lot of different things. If you mean texting as in using SMS text messages to other people's phones, that's kind of tricky on tablets. Or do you mean just you want to be able to chat with one another using the same app? Is it somebody you're going to text who's using a phone?
Yeah, just general, like people say, text me, and
right.
So it's a little hard on these phones,
sure.
So we thought maybe a tablet would be better.
Sure.
Or
both the iPad and the iPhone have the same capability. They call it Siri. You press and hold the button, and you can, I think you can send text messages via Siri. Let me see. Send a text message to Lisa. I'm just going to try this with my...
Who, me,
she says? Wait a minute, no. Send a text message to Lisa.
Who's Lisa?
Yeah, okay. And then it picked Lisa.
These are the phone numbers and email addresses for contacts named Lisa.
All right, good. So it has the right number.
What do you want to say to Lisa Kenzel?
I love you. Let's see what happens here.
Ready to send it?
It worked. Okay, so just okay. This is a plain old iPad without phone connection, and I was able to send that message using Apple's Messages app. It knew the phone number, so it had contacts in there, and I just sent a love letter to my girlfriend. So it worked. And,
cool.
And it didn't involve any the only dexterity was pressing and holding the home button on there.
Okay, so you have to hold that.
Yeah. Not the whole time, just when you want to get its attention. And then it'll interact with you the whole time. I don't know how much of that you could hear, but it worked pretty well. Now, Google does some of that. There are some tricks in getting it to go out to phones. Apple has solved this with Messages, so I think I'd stick with Messages. Of course, they're going to have to get their contact list into the iPad. Maybe you can help them with that.
Okay.
Yeah, because the iPad obviously doesn't know phone numbers until you give it the numbers.
Uh-huh.
But once they've got the numbers in there, you see, I did that by name. I didn't have to say a number or anything.
But can they put the numbers in by voice? Can they do it?
Yes,
everything by voice?
I think they can, yeah. It has voice dictation as well.
Yeah, because I was wondering, what about blind people? What do they use?
Well, actually, Apple and Android both have excellent accessibility features. Screen readers that will read you the contents of the screen. There are lots of ways to do that. So there are a lot of blind users who really like their iPhones, amazingly enough. So I think probably the iPad would be a very good choice for you.
Okay, sounds great.
You're welcome. All right.
Thank you so much, Leo.
Take care. There have been issues. In fact, there's a class action lawsuit going on against Apple because people who used to use iPhones and then changed to Android, they used to be on Apple's Messages but now are not, no longer receive text messages from friends and family who use Apple devices. And Apple knows about this, and they don't know why, but there seems to be a problem. Sometimes resetting your account works, but not always. It's a very weird bug, but that's fine. And this will actually let you send to any telephone, whether they have an iPhone or not. The problem only occurs if it's somebody who had an iPhone and then switches to an Android phone. It's just a bug, frankly. LaSalle on the line from Logan, New Mexico. Hi, LaSalle.
How you doing today, sir?
I am well. How are you?
I'm all right. Hey, I just want to say I've followed you ever since Call for Help.
Wow. That's back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yes, sir. Everything you recommend, I wind up going to buy. My wife tells me I'm kind of crazy, but...
Please apologize to your wife for me, LaSalle. I'm a bad influence. I know it.
So what got me was when you got your license as a ham.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Okay.
If this idiot can do it, anyone, right? That's what you were thinking. Yeah.
Well, he did it, so I can do it.
It's fun. You know, it's really a great hobby. And in fact, ham radio is pretty important, too. Hams are often the only line of communication after a disaster. After Katrina, it was hams that were able to get information out about the conditions,
yes,
and the floodwaters. They really make a difference. So I encourage people to become ham radio operators. It's easy. The FCC has eliminated the requirement for Morse code. That was the big change. You know, when you had to learn dot, 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 dash, 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 that was hard. But it's easy now to get a technician's license,
yes,
or a basic license.
Well, when you got yours, I said, okay, I'm going to start driving. So I got Gordon West. I listened to Ham Nation. I did that. Last Saturday, I took my technician, and I aced it. Didn't miss none.
LaSalle, congratulations, and welcome to the hobby. You haven't got your call sign yet, probably.
No, not yet. I probably have it this week.
Oh, that's exciting. Do you have a...
I got more good news for you, though.
What's that?
I took my general and passed that, aced it too.
Oh, LaSalle, you're not wasting any time. You're just moving right along.
So 2 months, July the 12th, I'm going back to take my extra.
All right. Good man. Yeah, there are three stages. There's technician, general, and extra. It's a little bit, actually, it's a lot harder as the tests go along, but I'm impressed. And now, do you have a radio?
Not yet. I'm looking at the ICOM.
ICOMs are great. I have all ICOM radios, although for initial starting out, a lot of times a handy talkie is the most useful little FM dual band radio, and they're not very expensive. A lot of good manufacturers, ICOM, of course, Kenwood, and they're a great way to get started. You can even go mobile with them, which is nice. Put them in your car. And
I'll put them in my truck. I'm a truck driver.
Oh, yeah. Every truck driver should be a ham. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
Well,
thank you.
You're welcome, LaSalle. Congratulations. That's awesome.
I'll let you know when I get my extra, and I hope that you upgrade to get your extra.
I will. You know, the hams are funny. I've been to ham. We were just talking yesterday to the folks in Dayton at Hamvention, but I've been to ham conferences where guys are wearing buttons around that say, "Just tell my wife it costs $1.50." Because hams, LaSalle, you think you spend a lot of money on technology now. You're just getting started. honey, would you mind if I put up a 150-foot tower in the backyard? You don't mind that, do you? You'll be building a ham shack. You'll have the radios. But actually, if you're on the road a lot as a truck driver, I think that's a great thing to have. Thanks, LaSalle. Thanks, everyone, for joining me. Thank you to Kim Schaefer for filling in. Nathan Staten, our musical director. Thanks to you for being here. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. See you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.